This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Barker Morrissey Construction and Power Women Investing.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure.
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
And good morning, everybody. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. And I'm once again no longer here.
No longer, you're just not here.
No, I'm no longer here.
I can talk.
Oh, I'm okay, so I'm here.
But your little brother, Jeff, is not here. And not only is he in an undisclosed location, we don't know where he is.
No, we don't.
He's gone missing.
He's the MIA completely.
Interesting.
So we are talking about the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful, George.
And yet you might actually...
Oh, did I even say your name? Well, you did.
See, I stepped on you, didn't I?
You interrupted me, so you didn't get introduced. So too bad.
It won't happen again.
Well, you're not going to get introduced.
I'm going to introduce myself. Neener.
No, so I am here with George Jensen, who is the webmaster for the Fred and Jeff Show.
Among other things, the perennial guest host.
Oh, yeah, the perennial guest host, because Jeff ditches us on a regular basis.
All right, thanks.
And he has his own little company called Jensen Consulting.
I do.
And if you want a boutique website design, database management.
Custom database, primarily.
Go to georgejensen.com, and you'll find all about George and his little things he does.
The little things I do.
Plus, you do vending, so you're Mr. Pinball?
I rehab pinball machines and do home rental of pinball machines, forthrightvending.com.
You're the pinball wizard.
Not hardly at all. So the pinball wizards are down at D&D Pinball on 7th and 4th. There's some great people down there. But if you want a home rental of the pinball machine, I'm your guy. And if you have a bar and you want pool tables and or jukeboxes, I'm also your guy. Forthright Vending does that as well. And I've got pool tables and jukeboxes scattered around Southern Arizona.
Yeah, they are. Pretty scattered.
And among all that, I also dabble in real estate. So
if you want to help George out, because he is pretty close to being destitute, go to the shanty and play pool.
We'll play pool, and he'll support my wife and I so that we're not destitute.
Yeah, no, George does very well, and he is very successful and makes his clients very, very happy. So, George, let's see. Lots of stuff going on.
My God, Tucson's busy, and we've had a busy one lately. We were just at Lyle Lovett.
Oh.
Dude. A very, very important part of the Summer of Fun.
Oh. Yeah, so let's talk about the Summer of Fun real quick, because George Jennifer came up with this idea.
I stole this idea heartlessly.
Yeah, so, you know, we live in the great Southwest. We have things in our backyard that we take for granted or we don't take advantage of at all.
So we decided to be tourists in our own town. And for the summer, we're doing a lot of the things that we haven't done in a long time.
Or never done.
Or had never done.
Yeah.
So, and we're doing some really off the wall. I mean, a lot of love is not off the wall. That was really fun. But we're just, adding in a few things that we, are kind of weird and quirky. A couple weeks ago, we went to the Golden Goose Thrift Shop in Catalina. Because we'd heard all about it, that it's a pretty interesting thrift shop.
A very interesting thrift shop. And, the mystique of the Golden Goose is that it is in an area with significantly wealthy retired population. And typically you see a lot of their old and gently used materials. Yeah. But I did get, I already have all the digital music from Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass.
But I saw you got the controversial album cover.
I got the controversial album cover, Whipped Cream. At the time, in the 60s, it was
pretty racy stuff.
Yeah, it was a woman covered in whipped cream. And it was like big scandal at the time. But it's a beautiful cover, and since I already have the music, I now have a piece of art.
It's all about the vinyl, man. It's very authentic.
It is about the vinyl.
So you've become a hipster.
Yeah, I am. I am. I live in on 4th Avenue, man.
That's true.
So, yeah, so I have a piece of beautiful art that will be on the wall. And I also have a 45 of The Lonely Bull.
Oh, perfect. What a great song.
Oh, yeah. So, did that. We've been just doing some fun stuff. Staycations around town.
Yep.
The JW Marriott.
Staycation at the JW Marriott is fabulous.
Yeah, and, casinos on the list.
Mm-hmm.
We went, this is some 4th Avenue-centric things. We went to the Tucson improv movement, which is, you know, codenamed Tim, over on 4th Avenue and 7th, and enjoyed a night of improv.
Some call him Tim.
Some call him Tim. But he's after...
No one's going to get that reference.
He's after a rabbit.
Now they might
chasing a rabbit, but or afraid of a rabbit. More.
Pretty sure Timmy and Shannon was just a ways over from the rabbit.
Yeah. So we've been doing a lot of things, and there's still a lot of things.
There's a lot going on. We've been doing second Saturdays, and the next one's coming up
on the 8th.
Yeah, on the 8th. Looking forward to that.
That's actually not this weekend. Is it next weekend?
It'll be two weekends.
2 weeks. Is the 8th. And not only is it second Saturday, but it's also the return of the mermaids on 4th Avenue.
Oh, that's right.
So Saturday, August 8th, and pretty much all day on 4th Avenue, because we have all the merchants are participating with this. But there is the 4th Avenue is actually transformed into a fantasy wonderland under the sea. And no better time than in August.
Well, yeah, August, you sort of need that because...
It gets a little warm.
That's my feeling, is August is one of the warmer months here.
Yeah.
It's among the two or three that are hottest.
Since it's so humid, there's water in the air, so we can...
So you can pretend you're under the sea.
Yeah, so there will be...
warm sea.
There will be mermaids here and there.
Fabulous.
Professional mermaids, I might add.
These are people that get paid to be mermaid. They get paid to mermaid?
Well, I think it might be some kind of fetish for them, so I don't know if we're actually giving them money for it, but they will be hanging
out.
They
get paid in pure pleasure of dressing up as mermaids.
That's right. And there'll be activities up and down 4th Avenue. There will be a mermaid parade. Bring the kids. It's so family friendly. And I believe there's even a little... The parade goes down to downtown area, into the beach area next to the hotel.
Yeah, you can find out about it online. Use your favorite search engine and go for a mermaid festival. And you'll be inundated with material.
Absolutely. So the summer in the city. I mean, you and I have, and Jennifer have, the summer of fun.
There's the summer of fun, but there's the summer of the city discount card.
Yeah, that's right. So for $5 at participating merchants, you get a discount card, and it's good all the way through the end of August, August 31st. Discounts all over Main Gate, 4th Avenue, downtown, and the Golden Mile. And the Golden Mile, for folks who don't know, is Broadway from downtown.
Mid-century Broadway.
It's an extension of Broadway from downtown.
Mid-century Broadway.
Oh, mid-century Broadway. Thank you.
Much of that was built in the mid-century.
That's true. And there's a little jostler on the end.
Yeah, there's some interesting architecture.
Yeah, so it goes from downtown, down Broadway, to Country Club.
Which used to be the edge of town.
You know, we
at
are...
At one point, they were all the edge of town.
It's all the edge of town. So go, if you go to TucsonSummer.com... it'll tell you where you can get a card and all the discounts. And George, I think still my favorite discount is the buy one, get one free lunch Monday through Friday at El Charro.
It's pretty tough to beat.
Yeah, but there are tons of discounts all over, up and down 4th Avenue, downtown, Main Gate, and along the Golden Mile. So take advantage of that. Patronize, you know, shop locally. I would say a good 90% plus, probably 95% plus, of merchants along this corridor are all locally owned.
Yeah.
Have a good time and support your neighbors, support the businesses, and just enjoy the summer. So last thing I got, and we're just trying, this is until November, but we're reminding folks because they are looking for volunteers and help and such. But the United Way of Tucson, Southern Arizona is putting together their Days of Caring program, which will actually happen November 4th and 7th of this year, but they are looking for volunteers, they're looking for sponsors, they're looking for people to reach out and help them. And this program touches probably, thousands and thousands of people in Tucson, and it's one of the single largest volunteer events that takes place in the Old Pueblo. So they're still looking for people to participate, to help their neighbor reach across the aisle and really make a difference in Tucson. So, George,
nice.
The last thing you have to
know... I actually have a few other items. I will give a short mention of the Harvest Fest. The Harvest Fest was going on yesterday, and it is going on today. And essentially, it's going on through about 4 p.m. today. So if you're not already in Sonoyta or on your way to Sonoyta, you're almost done, because they'll be done at 4 o'clock today. But that's been going on. We have a few other things. We mentioned Second Saturdays on the 8th. Just for you, Fred, it's only for you, but other people go, the 5th Annual Salsa and Tequila Challenge.
Now,
it's coming up on the 22nd.
Let me tell you a little story real quick, because Jeff and I were invited to participate in a salsa contest,
mm-hmm.
you know, making salsa.
Yeah, yeah. And I understand you and McCoy did, or you and Alec did it.
Well, Alec and McCoy and I ended up going. Jeff, again, bailed on us.
I'm stunned.
Yeah, so, but, and we lost. And the only reason we lost is because the stupid zoo people.
They're not stupid.
I love,
they're very nice people.
I love the Reed Park Zoo, but the people they sent to make their salsa cheated.
No.
They were giving out zoo passes to people who voted for
so
them.
So they were bribing.
Yeah, that's
cheating. That's not cheating. That's creative marketing.
Okay, so they were cheating.
So if you've been giving out Fred and Jeff Show tour passes to come watch the Fred and Jeff Show taping live.
Yeah, we would have lost even worse.
I know.
We
lost. Okay, forget the Fred and Jeff.
But the magic ingredient for
if you've got animals, you win.
Well, that's true. We should have brought a puppy.
That's true.
If we had actually brought a puppy.
Oh, a puppy. Puppy is a winner.
And then had McCoy and Alex stand in front of our salsa booth with the puppy and looking all cute, we would have won.
I think you might have won.
Okay, so I have a plan for next time.
All right.
It's done. It's
all right.
That's
okay.
My plan.
So
but
salsa and tequila.
But, no, I was going to say, the secret ingredient in my salsa was tequila.
Well, there you have it. So the salsa and tequila challenge going on at La Cantata on the 22nd. Friday Night Live on the 21st down at Main Gate Square. Always a good time. Down at Main Gate, and I'm a big fan because I live halfway between 4th Avenue and Main Gate, and it's Tucson's birthday, August 20th.
Aww.
So we'll have more on that next weekend, probably.
Will we?
I believe so.
We'll have Jeff sing happy birthday.
If Jeff's here.
You know,
otherwise, we can have him tape it.
Well, no, or we go to Mariachi Band.
Sure.
And do happy birthday to him.
That could be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could work with
them. Is that all you got?
Yeah.
We done?
I think we can go to a break.
All right, so we're actually going to give away a few things before we go to the break. Our friends at Mayfield Florist are giving away a dozen roses. So the first person who calls us at 520-428-5104, that is 520-428-5104, will get a dozen roses from our good friends at Mayfield Florist.
You have to give the password, which is, where is Jeff?
Excellent. So you guys are listening to the Fred and Jeff Show. We'll be right back.
Bit of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Unicom Graphics, Steel Door, and Sleeping Frog Farms.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt, and joining me today is the perennial Jeff substitute, George Jensen.
It's really great to be here, and I guess in honor of Jeff, I should use his signature tagline since I don't yet have one. Hola Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful. And George, you said that you were going to have your own tagline last time.
I was, but you know, I lied. I haven't come up with one yet. I'm working on it. Creative, you can't force creativity.
Well, maybe you're like, I'm the other white meat.
You know, I think there's, you know, some bad connotations with that, friend.
How about the smoking, what do you, let's see.
I'm not Jeff.
No, what? Because you just got a really nice electric smoker.
I did.
And you've been smoking.
I've been smoking everything I can get my hands on.
Yeah, so we call you the
Smoking George.
Smoking George.
No,
but that's not like a saying. That's not like a tagline.
No, I need like Hola Tucson, but not Hola Tucson.
How about?
Hey, everybody! It's really great to be here. No, that's Steve Martin seemed to use that.
Oh, that's right. He goes, "Don't you hate with comics?"
Say, "Hey, everybody! It's really great to be here."
All right, so somebody I hope is really great to be here is Stephen Lubliner, who is the NARUM 57 Contest Director. And before we tell people what NARUM 57 is, let's talk about Stephen. So, Steve, Are you from Tucson?
I've been in Tucson now for about 22 years.
And where'd you come from?
Came to Tucson from San Diego. I had a choice at the time of unemployment in San Diego or come to work for Hughes.
Ah, so you must be some kind of an engineer type.
I am an engineer type.
What is your engineering background?
I'm a mechanical engineer by degree, but I do mostly tests of all kinds. As I joke, if you want it broken, give it to me.
Well, that is sort of an engineering kind of thing. You dismantle things and figure them out, and maybe you can put it back together, maybe you can't.
What, in the
destructive testing, they call it.
Yes, in the hobby world, we call it re-kitting.
Re-kitting, I like that. Now, are you with Raytheon?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So you work with rockets for your day job and with rockets as your hobby.
Yes, I've been very fortunate that way.
You are a rocket scientist.
I am a rocket scientist. I actually have the T-shirt that says so.
I am right. I'm going to guess you're not the only one in the hobby or the industry that has that T-shirt.
You are correct. and part of it goes to, I have kind of a philosophy here that encompasses work and hobby. If you want to be an engineer, don't work at it, play at it.
I like that. I like that a lot. I'm not an engineer by training, but it's what I really want to be.
Well, being an engineer,
I'm a software engineer of sorts.
Okay.
But I'm also building an airplane in my garage, and I like to build things. I like to make things work. I like to fix things. So
you a pilot?
Yes, I'm a pilot.
Excellent.
So I'm 10 years into this airplane, and it's not far from flying. It needs the engine baffles built and some last few things assembled, and it's ready to go. So
wish you luck with that.
Well, thank you, but it's not as exciting as flying rockets. Now, let me ask you, before you became an engineer by training, did you fly rockets?
Yes, I did. I owe that to my father. My father was an engineer.
Okay.
He worked at Thiokol in the late 60s. Of course,
mm-hmm.
That was the highlight of the moon program.
Yeah.
Right.
And
Thiokol's, you know, a very well-known provider of things for all things NASA and Apollo.
Yes, yes.
So
I was always interested in cars and airplanes.
Nice.
And rockets.
Yeah.
So I've been doing rocketry now for about 45 years.
Oh, wow.
So I assume that you started off with the, I guess back then it would have been the Centauri line?
Centauri and Estes.
And Estes.
Were the big ones back then.
Yeah.
Century and Estes.
Yes.
Century. Centauri, I don't know where you got
that. Oh, Century, yeah.
Close
Century.
Enough.
Century.
Yeah.
And then
and
Century
guy. And it was two camps because I was a Century guy.
Oh, I was a total Century guy.
Yeah.
Actually, I liked the Century kits. They were probably a little bit more rugged than some of the Estes stuff.
Yeah. Century was what our hobby shop carried, and I grew up in a very small town, so it was Century or nothing.
The thing about Century, too, is they had more, they had like the Saturn V, they had the Little Joe, they had the the Mercury Redstone kits, all the like the real...
They did all the licensed stuff.
Yeah, I guess it would be licensed, but I mean, it's like you can actually pretend like you were, you know, down in Florida launching... A moon mission.
I think at one point I had a Nike rocket, too, which was a fairly interesting, you know, design, very long-nosed rocket.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So, yeah, so you started with A, B, C's, and D's, and E's, and
yes. Within the world of the hobby, we have what we call high-power rocketry.
Mm-hmm.
And high-power rocketry goes up to O motors.
Mm-hmm.
So to put an O motor in perspective, if you're used to the old Estes motors, for example, in Centauri...
Mm-hmm.
A O motor can be equal to about 4,000 Estes C motors.
Yeah, that does make some.
Oh man,
that's a big motor.
So what's the weight on a rocket?
You can easily launch a rocket in the hundreds of pounds. Recently in Australia, there was an attempt made for the largest hobby rocket. I was actually there to watch it, and the rocket was about 600 pounds. It was a full size V2.
Oh, my God.
Went up about 1,000 feet, but it was a gorgeous flight. Perfect recovery.
Nice.
Wow.
Large parachutes. They did a fantastic job.
That's excellent.
Now, we're going to be, you know, we're talking about you a little bit right now. We're going to be talking about model rocketry, and we're going to be talking about a great conference that's coming to Tucson. So when you were launching rockets, I mean, were you making the kits? Were you building your, you know, because when I first started doing this when I was a kid, we used to get, like, you know, paper towel rolls and, you know, make cones out of, the nose cones out of, you know, paper that you, you know, form that way. And the fins were usually popsicle sticks and that kind of stuff. So how did you start your career in rocketry?
I actually started it with model rocket motors, going to the local hobby shop. I think my first rocket was what's called the Estes Scout. Had no parachute on it at all. It launched straight up, and the motor slid back a little ways, and it tumbled back to the ground.
Right, right.
Was that the motor ejected and it fell without
it? It actually stayed in there, and it just changed where the balance was, so it kind of tumbled back to the ground.
Interesting.
And that's what I started with. Mm-hmm. It's actually a classic kit.
Yeah.
And then I started getting into more sophisticated rockets, two-stage rockets, rockets with payloads. Of course, back then, the payload was probably the local ant.
Right.
There's some small insect that you caught and decided we're going to launch you into space, Cricket.
Yep. And then I started doing some competition rocketry.
Mm-hmm.
And competition rocketry, you're trying to launch for either maximum altitude, generally maximum altitude, maximum duration, mm-hmm. or craftsmanship, who can build the best rocket.
Yeah. And they used to also compete at who could land one as close to the
takeoff. Yeah, spot landing.
Spot landing, who could land one as close to the takeoff zone as possible.
Yep, so. Yep.
Interesting.
And that's without help of radio control, by the way.
That's purely you got the angle right on the wind, and you judge the wind right.
Kentucky windage.
Exactly. Now, let me ask you, as soon as you went from hobby by the Estes kit, as soon as you're into what you call the hobby rocketry, now at that point, are you past the C motor, or are you into the DZ?
Yes. Well past it. Okay. Your model rocketry goes up to G motors.
Mm-hmm.
High power rocketry goes from H motors to O motors. Each letter is a doubling of power. So an A,
so
a B is twice as powerful as an A. Mm-hmm. C is four times an A, and onwards up the line.
Gotcha. Now, were you making your own motors at
no,
this time?
No. Within the hobby, that's the reason the hobby exists, is for safety, that we don't build our own motors. We don't load our own propellant.
Oh, okay. Because I thought for a lot of it, people were doing their own sugar motors. And
within the National Association of Rocketry hobby, there is no building your own.
Okay.
There's another rocketry organization, Tripoli Rocketry Association, that has what they call experimental. Mm-hmm. That permits, if you're certified within their program, they do permit the construction of your own rocket motors.
All right, so we need to take a hard break. We're going to be back in just a few seconds with Stephen Lubliner and George Jensen, and you guys are listening to the Fred and Jeff Show. This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Barker Morrissey Contracting, Ronstadt Insurance, and Casa de la Luz Hospice. This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Barker Morrissey Contracting, Ronstadt Insurance, and Casa de la Luz Hospice.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with George Jensen from George Jensen Consulting.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful. And we invite you to visit us at fredandjeff.com, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and you can even subscribe to this tome of wisdom and entertainment on iTunes and TuneIn Radio. So, George, we have been talking with Stephen Lubliner, who is the NARAM 57 contest director. We're still going to get to, you know,
we're going to talk about NARAM 57 and Sarah, but we're just geeking out on rocketry right now.
That's right. So
this is like October sky in July. It's not quite like October sky, is it? That's kind of like the ultimate geek rocket movie, though.
Right. And I've actually met Homer Hickel.
I would think so.
So as kids, we all used to, the three of us were sitting here talking about the rockets we used to build and fly. And during the break, Stephen, you were talking about a little bit of history of rocketry.
Tucson figures in
because the question we were talking before the break about how the engines in the NAR rocketry system, they're pre-made. You know, you don't have to goof around with chemicals or gunpowder or anything else. But there's some history, some Tucson history.
Well, basically, as far as the rocketry hobby, the hobby was developed back in 1958 The idea was that you didn't mix your own rocket motors and have explosions. Again, if you've seen October Sky, mm-hmm. you remember he blows up the fence on his first attempt. So the idea was is to avoid injuries, people losing eyes and fingers. Vern Estes started Estes Industries.
Mm-hmm.
He, his brother actually lived here in Tucson.
Yeah, I knew his brother. Yeah.
And he basically was not the person who invented model rocketry. There was another gentleman named G. Harry Stein who invented the hobby. He's considered to be the father of model rocketry. He did this with a shoe salesman who was into fireworks at the time, Orville Carlisle. And this is back again, 1957, 1958. They started a small company called Model Missiles Incorporated. Mm-hmm. But also Mr. Estes had his company. Mr. Estes, basically one of his biggest contributions was the mass production of the rocket motors.
Well, I said the motor's really the only thing that the hobbyist typically buys. Everything else you can buy a kit for, but you can fashion the airframe yourself.
Yes.
And so, you know, having a reliable, safe motor is kind of the key component.
Definitely.
And I would imagine that's the same even as you get up into the, you know, to the higher levels. It's just everything becomes bigger and more complex.
And more expensive, unfortunately.
Well, yeah. More expensive. You're doing stuff out of carbon and Kevlar and, you know, epoxy.
True. And within that high power world, okay, there's three levels of high power that mm-hmm. we certify. The two national organizations, the National Association of Rocketry and Triple E Rocketry Association, we have compatible certification programs. So at the lowest level, you basically come out to us with a motor, an H or an I motor. So again, just to put that into perspective, that's about 32 Estes C motors equivalent
that's
for an H motor.
HRI, that's a big motor.
It's a bigger, yeah, definitely a big motor. Mm-hmm. And you've got to demonstrate that you can safely fly an HRI powered rocket. Mm-hmm. Level two is J, K, and L. There's a written test associated with that. We're going to look at some rocket science, some regulations in there, how you set up a range. So that's the basics, one of the basic elements in level two. And then level three is, that's M, N, and O motors. And that's more involved. You basically have a member of what's called the Level 3 Certification Committee. They're going to review your design. They're going to sign off on your structure. They're going to sign off on your recovery system. And then they're going to witness the flight to sign you off.
Gotcha.
And generally, a Level 3 model, you're talking a model that probably minimum of 7 to 8 feet tall, typical. Mm-hmm. Typically about 6 inches or more in diameter. And even a heavy level 3 model is still good for over a mile.
Is that typically what you're looking at on some of these is a mile?
A mile is actually on the smaller end. The model, the high, very, very high performance model is capable of 100,000 plus feet.
Mm-hmm.
And even the mid-range, if you're not designing for spectacular performance, you're still talking 15,000 to 20,000 feet.
Wow.
Here in Tucson, we're limited because we do coordinate with the FAA. So for those who are pilots, mm-hmm. who know who are these yahoos out there flying rockets, we do it in accordance with federal aviation regulations. We coordinate with the FAA, and we have waivers, and they have given us a waiver to 6,500 feet mm-hmm. above ground level.
Yeah.
So that's our limit here. But 15,000 to 20,000 feet is not
unheard of.
It's not unusual at all.
So if I'm watching late night TV, what's the show that does all the big? It shows the competitions, but it also has a what's the weird part of the competition where it's anything goes sort of airframe. People are launching jukeboxes and neon signs.
There have been all kinds of things there. There have been outhouses on the smaller.
Now, was that an NAR event?
I think that was what it was, the Tripoli sponsored event.
Okay. Yeah. So because there's a series of those, but they're in Kansas 1 year. They're in the Black Rock Desert.
That's
next
Tripoli.
Year. That's all Tripoli? Okay.
Tripoli.
Okay,
yeah, like the Libyan town.
Yeah. So. Okay. Interesting. So 6,500 is where we're going here, and that's going to be when, and tell us, this is NARAM 57.
Right.
Well, before we get to NARAM, let's talk about SARA, because you're talking about where do you guys launch? I mean, you have airspace cleared over on the west side of the valley.
We're about 10 miles west of the Desert Museum, and it's also a place that's called Tempa, which also does a lot of radio control
So that's the radio-controlled strip as well?
Correct. We actually fly on the other side from the radio control folks.
Well, you need to, but you need to coordinate with them because you don't want launching rockets into a into an RC aircraft.
Right. That probably upset them.
Yes. Yeah. We could do some ground-to-air combat stuff.
That upsets people. So yeah, we try to avoid that.
In-air collisions are best simulated, I think. Yeah.
And some of their guys are bigger than us.
Oh, okay. Very nice. So, but let's talk about SARA for a second. So SARA is the Southern Arizona Rocketry Association.
Correct.
And you guys formed when?
About 20 years ago now, 1995. And there were about four of us. We actually met over at the old Zachary's Pizza Shop.
Oh, yeah.
And that was kind of the inaugural meeting.
Great hangout.
And initially, we were, I'll call it, gypsies. There used to be a lot of vacant land over on the west side, especially where Continental Ranch is now. So we used to fly out there initially. And then we got our current field out at Tempa, out in the far west area.
Right. So what were the goals? I mean, drunken gypsies launching rockets to, NAR-certified flights. What was the transition there?
They were university students. I was the old guy.
Yes, so a bunch of engineering students primarily?
Actually, engineering. They, again, enjoying the hobby.
Right.
And at the time, I'd say it was primarily, let's have fun.
Right.
Again, I'd been in the hobby for about 15 years at that time. They were newer in the hobby. And it was just to have fun. As the club has grown, you could say our mission has grown, and our mission is still one, is to have fun with the hobby. Two, we do a lot of outreach. We go into the schools, we'll do what we call building flies with the schools, where we'll have the students build rockets, and then we'll fly their rockets.
So is that like, I know Estes has those alpha kits, it's like multi-packs of alphas and...
Yes.
Yeah, so do that.
Yeah, we've done classes of over 100 at a time.
Wow.
So it's interesting. And then we've been out flying with the kids. So we'll do that. We'll do demonstrations for the schools. We'll take a bunch of different rockets. For example, I have a small model of a outhouse that I fly.
I have one of those.
Yep. That's been a popular one.
It's a great kit.
There's a rocket that looks like a spool. A wire spool. We'll fly the spool rockets. We'll fly, there's another one that's basically one of the longtime flyers. His soup bowl is converted into a rocket. Nice. As I joke during the classes, I said, well, he didn't want to do dishes, so he just made a rocket out of his soup bowl.
Right. Yeah, there used to be kits back in the day. It was like vacuum-formed plastic and had the Starship Enterprise and a bunch of those things. And they would always, you get a couple launches out of them and they just fall apart.
They fall apart. They didn't fly that well.
No, not at all.
Making something like the Enterprise fly safely as a model rocket is difficult.
Ordering is impossible, yeah.
Yes.
Well, they sold the kits.
Yes.
Well, I don't doubt that they sold the kits.
Yes. There are also a lot of the Star Wars stuff.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Which may make a comeback.
The flying
RPD-2
is kind of that's kind of...
RPD actually flies fairly well.
Well, yeah, it's one of the few shapes that probably does. But with enough motor, anything will fly.
Right.
Will it fly well is the question.
One of the sayings in the hobby is, in thrust we trust.
In thrust we trust.
Very nice. So you guys have been out there for about 20 years. You went from flying randomly in the desert... And you secured the location out at Marana.
Yes. Yeah. The Tempa facility is a city park. And basically, the city rents the land to the Tempa group. And we coordinate with the Tempa group for the rocketry use. They also have astronomy out there. Again, they have a rather extensive radio control set up out there. They've got runway, Ramada. So they have a very nice facility, which is one reason we're using it for the NARAM 57, is because it is a nice facility. Nice. It has lots of room for us to fly.
Excellent. Okay, so
tell us about NARAM 57.
We're going to take a break.
Oh, don't tell us about NARAM 57.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Stephen Lubliner about model rocketry, SARA, and the huge event coming to Tucson this week. We'll be right back on the Fred and Jeff Show.
Portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Anthony's Cigar Emporium, Power Women Investing, and Mayfield Florist.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt, and I'm joined today by the ever effervescent George Jensen.
Effervescent?
Did I stutter?
A little bit.
Did I?
No, maybe not.
Oh, Jeff,
you made me sound like a cure for a heartburn.
Oh. Plop, fizz.
Yeah.
Oh, George, you are the...
Hola, Tucson.
So we have been talking rockets with Stephen Lubliner, who is with SARA, the Southern Arizona Rocketry Association. And we're going to talk about the NARAM 57 event going on right now. But before that, let's just talk very quickly about safety. Because, you know, back in the day when we used to manufacture our own rockets... safety was not really a huge concern because for a 12-year-old kid, anything that flies in the air and then maybe potentially has the ability to blow up, that's kind of cool. But, yes. You know, we live in an urban area and, you know, there are some issues that we need to be concerned about when we're responsibly flying model rockets.
And there's several aspects to safety of it. First off, all of the different aspects of hobby rocketry have safety codes associated with them. What the rocket is made out of, that the motors are manufactured, certified motors, how big the fields should be.
Fields where you're launching
the launch fields, that you're going to have electrical ignition for your rocket motors. You know, no sitting there with the piece of fuse. No light in the fuse anymore.
People didn't do that in the 70s. By that time, people were pretty safety conscious. I don't know what Fred's talking about making his own motors and blowing stuff up, but we were pretty... safety conscious.
I never made my own motors, but, you know, you can design a rocket that when the ejection charge goes off...
There's a black powder charge. Sure,
The rocket doesn't come back, you know, one piece.
Mm-hmm. And you have the safety. There's several aspects of the safety. One, we look at the rockets, all the rockets, before they fly. So we're looking for things like...
Like things I would do.
Well, loose fins. Loose fins.
A black powder charge that Fred stuck in there. It's coming across bones, painted on the side.
Right. So we're looking at things like that. Also, when we're flying for the range safety, we're scanning the skies. We're making sure there's no aircraft overhead. We're looking that no one is standing near the launch pads when we're flying. We're the prescribed distances away. For the smaller rockets, it's 15 feet. For some of the larger rockets, it's 300 feet. So we're keeping safety, and we're trying not to launch over the crowd. We want wherever, if the rocket should come in hard, we want it to come in the middle of the desert, not come in through somebody's car.
Right. Yeah.
So we're very conscious of also the trajectory of the rocket.
Yeah. Now, I got to say, I've been out to the field on several occasions, and you guys run a very tight ship, and I know everybody appreciates that. I've got to see a couple of certification flights, it's what you described earlier in the show about, you know, inspecting the rockets and making sure, you know, doing the 20 questions with the person who brought it and built it and all that kind of stuff. It's totally cool. Totally cool out there. So let's just do this real quickly. If people want to participate, you guys are out there every weekend.
We're there actually once a month.
Oh,
our SARA calendar is available at www.sara.rocketry.org, and we fly once a month. We alternate Saturdays and Sundays. In the even months, we're on Saturdays. In the odd months, we're on Sundays.
And a couple months ago, you just had the big nighttime.
That nighttime and what was called Desert Heat, which was a 2-day event. So. Right. A lot of flying during the day, and then we had night launches.
And if you become a member of CERA, you can fly for free, but it's $5 all day if you want to come
out. And that's for as many rockets as you want to fly. And that's only for an adult. Kids always fly free at the normal CERA launches.
And you have rockets out there if people don't have anything they want to come out and fly.
We have what we call our rental rocks, which are smaller club rockets that for $2 a flight basically pays for the motor. You can fly, prep and fly one of our rockets.
Nice. That's a great way to get people in.
Yep.
Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about NIRM 57.
Started yesterday. What's going on?
Yes. And NIRM 57, for the remainder of today.
Well, first of all, what is it?
Okay, it stands for the National Association of Rocketry Annual Meet. Okay, originally it started out as being just a competition for the National Association of Rocketry, and it was a national level competition. And a rocketry competition is typically combination of altitude events, duration events, and craftsmanship events. A duration event might be a parachute-equipped rocket, how long you can keep it in the air. An altitude event might be egg-loft altitude, which is who can launch a raw egg to the highest altitude and bring it back in one piece. If you damage the egg, you're disqualified. And then craftsmanship might be a scale event where you choose a real model, let's say a Saturn, like we were talking earlier, and you build a scale model of the Saturn, and it's going to be judged for color scheme, how well you painted it, how straight everything is, no glue smears. So those are the basic types of events that we're going to be flying.
Wow. Now, does anybody ever fly like an old, I would call it like an antique, like Saturn V, or, I mean, stuff like that is either still in a box or it's on a shelf somewhere.
There's still some flights of older models out there, especially in the sport launching. And the sport is just fun launching. And you'll see people, they're proud of it. They've got a 1965 something or other that's got 100 flights on it, and today is flight 101.
Oh, that's great.
So, you see that.
Retro rocketry.
Yes, it's retro rocketry big time.
I like it.
And we enjoy it, too, because, again, it's all the memories.
Sure.
So we really enjoy seeing the old kids come out. One of the things that we have at NIRM 57 that's a non-flight event is we have what's called a cannon auction, where people donate, we auction off different types of rocketry nostalgia, and that gives money for an education fund that the NAR sponsors.
Nice.
Wow.
Because they give $500 grants to teachers who use rocketry in the classroom. And this auction helps pay for that fund. So you'll see some of the old kits out there.
Fantastic. Now, so somebody just says, hey, this sounds interesting, I want to go. What are the hours? How easy
we're is it? We're launching we're launching from 7 to 2.
Okay.
7 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon.
Yes, we're trying to avoid the monsoons and try to eliminate some of the heat.
Yeah.
If you want to fly sport, where it's $10 for the full day for flying.
And you can fly as many times as you want.
You can fly as many times as you want. If you want to come out there and spectate, no charges whatsoever.
Nice.
Just enjoy. We will have food vendors out there. We'll have rocket vendors out there. So if you decide that you want to get started in the hobby and you want to get your first kit, we've got more than enough people out there happy to get you started.
Fantastic.
If you're looking for your certification model, we've got folks who have bigger models on sale for certifications. Again, you'll see a combination of flights there on the sport range. You'll see flights of rockets that are maybe 3-4 inches tall, and they're going up to, you know, luckily 100 feet. You'll see rockets that are 5-6 feet tall that could easily be going over a mile.
Wow, that is just spectacular. I mean, I love watching those kind of launches.
They're fun. There's some interesting aspects. Of course, there's always the noise from the larger motors. Some of the larger motors, depending upon the design, you'll see some different colored smoke trails. Some are just white. Some have a red flame or green flame, so you'll see a little bit there. Some of the rockets will do different things, too. Like, there's rockets that recover. They put out a rotor system and come down like helicopters.
Interesting.
You'll have rockets which are gliders. And some of the gliders are radio controlled, so they'll launch straight up as rockets,
wow.
and then transition to radio
control.
And it's easy, much easier nowadays because some of the radio control stuff is less than half an ounce.
Yeah, interesting.
That is amazing. So, and anybody, are there any, like, this is one thing I always try to look for is locally owned rocket supply places that, that you know, you can find like an Estes model at a hobby store, that kind of thing. But if you are really interested in building your own from scratch, where can you go locally?
Generally, locally, you're not going to do that well here to find the parts to build your own. You're pretty much going to end up mail order.
So the guys that are going to be at the event are people who are coming in?
Yes. We have a couple vendors there who have all of the parts that you would need and or kits. But they'll have tubes, they'll have balsa wood and plastic nose cones. They'll have internal parts for the rocket, parachutes. So yes, if someone wants to build their own design from scratch, there'll be people out there who can provide the parts and pieces.
So just come out with your part list.
Come out with your parts list.
Yeah,
and if you don't know,
if you don't know,
come out and they'll give you a parts list to work with.
Yes, you know, come out with a sketch and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
What do you want to build?
Perfect. So last thing we always like to ask people, any sponsors you want to give a shout out to?
We're very thankful to the DoubleTree at Reed Park. They are the host motel for the event, and they've been very good to work with. We have some food vendors out there. Mutz is one of them.
And these are on the website as well, correct?
They are on the website, the different vendors and stuff there.
Yeah.
We do have the food vendor, I think Isabella is one of them.
Excellent. Excellent.
Which to me, they've got ice cream, that's critical.
Yeah. So one last time, give us the website.
Okay. The Narum 57 website is www.narum57.org.
Okay, and Sarah?
Sarah is www.sararocketry.org.
Perfect. Stephen, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
George, thanks for being here again.
Always a pleasure.
And give me a call at 520-428-5104, 520-428-5104. The first person calls will get a gift certificate to PETA Jungle.
The password is whoosh.
We'll see all you guys next week on the Fred and Jeff Show. Let's talk about the good time. Let's talk about the good time. I wish I could just go back to the days I'm speaking of. When a friend would meet you and a smile would greet you. What this old world needs now is an old fashioned love. Ain't it guitar? Yeah. Preach it, son.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Sleeping Frog Farms and Fred's Meditation Salon and Tequila Lounge.